Well, a cold weather warning has been sounded. It's snowing in a lot of places outside and it's going to affect rough sleepers and those living in makeshift accommodation like the asylum seekers living in tents in Knocklisheen on the Clare-Limerick border. RTÉ's Drive Time spoke to some of those living there today. They spoke of the cold, described long distances to the toilets, increasing numbers of people catching respiratory infections and a growing sense there are two very different standards of international protection being offered by Ireland. Here's Goza, an asylum seeker from Nigeria, talking to Drive Times John Cook.
I understand situation like this can come for government. I mean, challenges like this come for government. It is their primary responsibility to look after everybody, not to be selective. Because after we left City West, a lot of people came after us and they were being treated well. So why is our own different?
So you think other asylum seekers have come from City West since you moved in July?
Yeah.
And haven't been sent to tents?
Yeah. They were never been taken to tents. So what's the difference?
All right, those feelings also shared by the Ombudsman for Children, Niall Muldoon, who wrote to the Taoiseach saying differential treatment was problematic. Craig Hughes.
Yeah, Sarah Burns in the Irish Times had the story very good. I think this has been something that has been put at government since we started taking in refugees from Ukraine, that they'd created this hierarchy amongst refugees, and it's something they refuted quite dramatically. But it really becomes apparent in this letter here where the Ombudsman is saying, you know, children from Ukraine, or not from Ukraine, are being viewed less favourably and they're getting different treatment regarding services and entitlements. And he said it's problematic. And one thing that came to my mind with all this as well was, and of course, in the background before the war, you had the government trying to end direct provision. When you see how much the state has done since the war began, and to think that they got direct provision down to a figure of almost around 4,000 and weren't able to get rid of it, it really just shows you how much of a lack of will there was previously to get that done.
John McGann.
I think Niall Muldoon's letter provided a lot of, very valid concerns. And I think those valid concerns are being listened to by government, because the Taoiseach stated in the Dáil himself that he wanted the Minister for Education and the Minister for Children to meet the Children's Ombudsman as soon as possible to kind of talk about those concerns and how they could be resolved. One small example, what the Minister for Education did straight away after that letter, it was a letter, wasn't it? Or it was a, letter, yeah, after that letter was written, was the Minister for Education then ensured, and this should have happened before and I don't know why it was, but the Minister for Education ensured that that educational programme that was open for all Ukrainian children to try and get them into the Irish system as quickly as possible and get them up to speed is now open to non-Ukrainian children as well. So I don't know why that wasn't the case before, it really shouldn't have been. But there's one very small example of what has been done since. When it comes to the situation around refugees and Ukrainians and people fleeing persecution from other parts of the world, we have an absolute moral obligation to try and help these people and provide a safe haven for them. 66,000 Ukrainians have come here this year, and we have 17,000 people who come through the international protection system as well. They are, look, I don't need to tell anyone, they're huge, huge numbers. And accommodation is a difficulty. There's nobody saying it's not. It is a very tough thing to do, to house that many people coming to this country. And we're having to use all sorts of accommodation, whether that's sports halls, whether that's hotels. The concept of tents, utterly not acceptable. And I know the government are making every effort now to get those people out of there. But it is a tough situation and we're doing our absolute best.
Okay, and how come there were, according to the report that went out today, no Ukrainians in that tent? Is it a situation where the Ukrainians are believed, because the war is on the news the whole time, other people stories are being checked more rigorously?
I disagree, and I don't think there is a hierarchy in terms of it. Whether you're coming from Ukraine or whether you're coming from Africa or Asia or South America, wherever it is, if you're fleeing persecution, if you're fleeing war, if you're fleeing death and destruction, we're going to make sure you have a safe haven in this country.
There is a different system, let's just be clear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, they are being treated differently, completely.
Yeah, but like, there is a different system, because a different, like, that system where you're fleeing persecution from a different country, like international, like say, like I'm just going to say genocide, for example, in one country is different compared to a war that's happening in Ukraine. So the first system was always there. The second thing is what's happening is where we're having to take in huge amounts of Ukrainian refugees at very short notice because of a war that has broken out on the European continent.
I don't understand why it's different, but
I would say that is the key. War is war. And You know, absolutely. Obviously, the travel issue is different because you have the temporary protection directive in terms of that aspect of it. Again, and bearing in mind that the European Parliament tried to use that same measure in respect of Syrian refugees in 2015. And it's a pity that the opportunity wasn't taken in relation to Syrian refugees to do that. But when it comes to the end, the International Convention on Refugee Rights is that all refugees do have that same right, those same rights. And there is a difference, you know, that idea that because this is a war on the European continent, that's somehow different from people who are fleeing genocide or fleeing war in Syria, in Ethiopia, in Eritrea, in Yemen, in all these parts of the world. At the moment, there is a really, you know, there are very, very serious, and indeed not just war, but the other major drivers we know, for example, like the hunger we're seeing in the Horn of Africa. So we do need to make sure, and this is what the Ombudsman said, is that we need to make sure that we're fulfilling the basic requirements of that convention on refugees, and that we're fulfilling it for everybody. And it really is unacceptable that children, that one kind of children were immediately integrated and given all of these education and language supports to come into the system, and that other children weren't. And it's good that that's being done now. Okay. It's good that the issue's been examined. But can I just point out one other gap?
Well, I'll come back to you. Yeah. Kathleen Funchin.
Yeah, so first of all, I just want to say Niall Muldoon is just an excellent advocate for children. He really is. I think, obviously, what he's probably referring to is the situation that if you're living in direct provision, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you as a child in terms of access to education, even in terms of, I suppose, having like the practical tools to do homework and everything. And we do know as well that there's issues when you get to leave and certain, then hoping to go into college in terms of access and SUSE grants and everything else like that. So we can't have a situation where there's you know, two different systems. It should be the same for all children and for everybody fleeing. Now, I do accept that, you know, the situation that happened with Ukraine, you know, initially, obviously, there had to be an emergency response. And you're not going to get that perfect. But we are nearly a year into this situation. And I do think at this stage, there should be a lot more planning and a lot more joined up thinking. I think far too much has been expected of one department that already has a huge amount in it.
But it's always two-tier, isn't it? I mean, for Syrian refugees in Lebanon, the government made an effort to go over and take people directly from refugee camps in Lebanon and Jordan. You know, the crisis that's in the news is the crisis that gets the urgent attention. The crisis that's further away doesn't.
Well, nearly a year in, I would say we need to look at far more joined up thinking. As I said, I think there's far too much for one department. I think housing and education and health need to be playing a role as well. There has been some really good examples from the Irish Refugee Council, recommendations of different things around accommodation in terms of, you know, access and trying to access holiday homes and other kind of short term lets like that. I think we need to start looking at that. And I think what has happened is, and I'm sure that certainly probably John has come across this situation where your constituents will come to you and say, you know, that they know of accommodation that's available, or maybe it's a GAA club that has a facility or a community hall, and they want to help, they want to play their part, and nobody has come back to them. They've said, we have accommodation here, they've pledged it. And I think that comes down to the fact that there's too much being dealt with by one department. I think it's totally unfair on that department. And we mightn't have seen a situation of people staying on airport floors and stuff if they had looked at that. But I think it's a very important point that Niall Muldoon makes. And I think if it makes any difference having it in the public domain, you know, his words and that, I think, are really important.
Craig, you were struggling with the difference between the two things before we left last time.
It's just not surprising that this has happened, sadly, because, you know, we've had successive governments ignore the issue of direct provision for all extents and purposes. It's taken the Green Party in this coalition to really take it on. They had to take it off out of the Ministry for Justice to try and get it done. Now they've obviously been hampered by the war. So I'm just not surprised when I hear this response from government about, OK, we're going to try to fix it, when they've had a system in place for a long time that trapped people in direct provision for years and years and years to stop them working. Again, the issues around education. So the words ring a bit hollow on this one, I'm afraid.
John McGann, is there an argument that the differing treatment of one cohort of people seeking international protection plays into the notion that others are less deserving?
No, not at all, because everyone is deserving, because everyone is you know, fleeing some sort of a persecution in one way or another. You know, as Alice Mary said, that could be famine in the Horn of Africa, or it could be war in Ukraine. So, you know, if you're coming to this country and you're fleeing from either, you know, whatever it is, and you're able to show that and it's able to be clear, then, yeah, you're obviously going to be able to come into this country and go through the whole system. Just to go back to the whole point with Niall Muldoon and children in particular, you know, and I did read his letter in detail before coming on today. And I would agree with Kathleen as well. He makes, you know, any public interactions I've seen as a children's ombudsman in the last 2 years have, you know, been well measured, well thought out. And I would really hope that government will meet with him as soon as possible in terms of the Minister for Children and the Minister for Education and try and get some of these issues.
Alice Mary Higgins, you wanted to make another point very briefly before we move on to the next item.
One of the problems is that the system that we had in direct provision was, as Craig described, it was designed to keep people apart. It was designed to stop integration. It was designed, you know, we're trying to not allowing refugees or asylum seekers to work. It was, you know, in isolated locations. You know, it was very much something that was designed to discourage people from seeking asylum and to discourage integration. And then, of course, when we have the volume of Ukrainian refugees, what we have is measures that are there to support integration, because that's what works better on refugee policy in general.
Right.
So I think it's really crucial that those measures of integration
I suppose on the broader international level, the bigger version of that point is Ukrainians were facilitated going to the European Union. €3 billion was paid to Turkey by the European Union to stop Syrians going there, John McGann.
Do you want to go in first and I'll come in?
Quick round of responses and then we'll move on.
I'm not the interviewer. Sorry, apologies about that.
Sure.
Alice Mary and I are usually like that in the Senate when we're debating each other. Anyway, sorry, to go back to the point there. Sorry, could you say the question again there?
Well, just if the differing treatment, it's done at international level as well. I mean, Turkey was paid a substantial amount of money to stop Syrians getting to Europe. Ukrainians were let into Europe. I mean, there's the difference writ large.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good example because both are fleeing wars, whether it was in Syria or whether it was in the European or whether it was in Ukraine. However, I think what posed a threat with Ukraine really was that it was such an emergency situation that came about so quickly, and that you had millions and millions and millions of Ukrainians fleeing into many European Union countries. And I think that's the difference.
Well, we also had millions of people fleeing from Syria in an emergency situation. And absolutely, Turkey isn't the only one. We had, I think, 11 immigration control deals that Europe has signed to basically disappear the issue of migrants and of refugees seeking. And, the Libyan detention camps are one example.
Sure.
And
the hard Sudanese borders were paid money not to allow people to transit through the hard borders
between African countries. When we talk a lot about how a hard border is a bad thing in our island, but in fact, EU money is paying for hard borders between African countries simply to control migration to Europe.
Something I think the African Union raises an eyebrow at and more. OK, we're going to get to some of your messages there. One, John and Tremor making the point that effectively Ukrainians look more like Irish people than people coming seeking applications from other countries. That might explain the differential. We also have, going back to the data centres, somebody saying that would we forgo our smartphones that the data centres wouldn't need the electricity? We're speaking out of both sides of our mouths, as a texter who presumably on principle didn't text from a smartphone. And somebody else saying nuclear power. Back in the 1970s, if the government had stood their ground, there'd be a nuclear power plant on Cairnsore Point. And I think that's a debate that has been had many times over the years. We're